John Tibbetts is the Georgia Teacher of the Year for 2018. You're going to love this episode. Thanks for listening. Hooah!
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. Now here's Steve with this week's show.
John Tibbetts is a 21-year veteran of the U.S. Army. During his military service, he was stationed overseas for more than 5 years and served in combat as a tank company commander in Desert Storm, was deployed to Turkey in the Iraq War, and saw service with a NATO headquarters in Afghanistan. He was on duty in the Pentagon on 9/11. Since retiring from the Army as Lieutenant Colonel in 2004, Tibbetts has worked in the private sector, but ultimately decided to pursue a teaching career. First in Tift, later in Dougherty, and at Worth County High School, where he currently teaches economics. John notes, "Every day I get to teach a subject that plays an important part of the very fabric of our students' lives and is relevant to what is going on in the world around us." He holds a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science from the United States Military Academy at West Point and a Master's of Military Art and Science from the Army's prestigious School of Advanced Military Studies at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, whose graduates are sometimes referred to as Jedi Knights. He is an 8-year veteran of the classroom and has taught U.S. and world history, geography, and government, in addition to economics. Mr. Tibbetts is a 2018 Georgia Teacher of the Year. Say hi to everyone, John.
From Worth County, hello. Good to see you.
John, first, let's start with, I got to do this, hooah!
Hooah?
All right. Thank you for your service to our country. And what got you interested in West Point? And I got to ask, tanks.
Well, West Point came along in high school. A teacher of mine was a military college graduate. He was not an academy graduate, and I liked what I saw. I thought that he seemed to have it together, and so I became interested in attending a military college. I have an uncle who was in the Marine Corps during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he pulled me aside at one point and said, "Look, if you're going to go to a military school, don't take any half steps. You need to go for an academy." And so that's what I did. Initially, I was more interested in going to Annapolis because I wanted to be a pilot than I was West Point. But the stars aligned, and that's the way things fell, and I was offered an appointment to West Point. And during the period that you're in the academy, you do a good bit of training and really sort of get to sample the smorgasbord of military occupations, and I found that I liked being on top of a tank.
Awesome.
Why ride? Why walk when you can ride?
I like that. Yes, that's nice. As a former signal, you know, I like that. You know, if you can ride, that's good stuff. That's right.
Yeah, it is. It beats walking every day.
Most definitely. So you served in Desert Storm in Iraq, as well as Turkey and Afghanistan. And I understand that you were at the Pentagon when terrorists attempted to use American Airlines Flight 77 to destroy our military capabilities of command on September 11th, 2001. Any thoughts you'd like to share?
Well, you know, as a soldier, you just go where the Army sends you. And I think my service taught me a lot about patience. You end up sitting around a lot and watching the shovel rust or the paint dry, and then you have these abject periods of terror that you have to deal with. So one of the things that I think from my military service is it gave me an appreciation of what other veterans have done and their service. Serving in NATO, I was seconded to the U.S. Army, back to the U.S. Army to go to Turkey. And then after going to Turkey, I was sent to Kabul as part of a NATO headquarters. So as I say, you go where the Army sends you. And really, it taught me, I think, to develop an attitude of sort of grow where you're planted. And that has served me well.
Awesome. You've got many different experiences here, serving your country in war, and then helping to deal with the attacks on our country afterwards. And you go on from those experiences to then attend And I'm guessing this is the order that it happens in, that eventually you attend the Army School of Advanced Military Studies?
Right. The School of Advanced Military Studies is a second-year program from the Army's Command and General Staff College. So as a major, you get selected to attend what we call CGSE, Command and General Staff. That's a one-year program, a master's level kind of work in warfare. But then there is this second-year program that was available. SAMS was started in 1983 as the Army came out of a real introspective period trying to figure out what it was about after Vietnam. And so SAMS was developed really to give a group of selected graduates from the Command and General Staff College the opportunity to think more broadly and more deeply about the art of war. And so what you end up with is a group of classically trained officers, classically trained in the realm of strategy and operational art. And, you know, a lot of what you do, I think, especially maybe in the Army, coming out of the military, is you see someone who makes an impression upon you, and then you go, well, what is it that person has that I want? And what is it that person is doing that I like? And as a captain, after Desert Storm, I was exposed to some guys on our division staff, and everybody seemed to listen to them, and they really seemed to have their stuff together, and they were articulate. And I go, what is it those guys did? And come to find out, they were SAMS graduates.
Awesome.
And so I said, hey, I want that. That's who I want to be. That's what I want to do. And so when I was given the opportunity to apply, I did.
That's excellent. And I got to come around to something that you talked about, which is kind of like this idea of hanging out with the people you'd like to, you know, figuring out those people that are, you know, got it going, and hanging around them, and then going after what, you know, that influence, I guess, is the point that you'd like to see your own kids do, and the kids that you work with and stuff like this understand that those who you hang out with can end up
that's absolutely true.
Helping or hurting you, right? Well, tell me about that nickname. They call them the Jedi Knights. I got to know about this.
Well, the first operation that SAMS graduates really had any impact on was in Panama, and there were a group of officers who went down and helped plan. A great deal of synchronization. I know a good bit about the Panama operation. A guy that I happened to have the chance to be an aide de camp for was the operations, the J3, the general operations officer who really put that whole thing together. An incredible piece of synchronization work to put a whole lot of different moving parts together to make, as we like to say, the hammer drop all at one time on Noriega. In Just Cause. But then where SAMS really earned its keep was when Desert Storm came along, and there was a core group of officers who ended up being the planning group for that. And when it goes off well and it's well synchronized and they've thought deeply and long and put a whole lot of moving parts together, you know, the old mind meld, you don't want to see my license.
Nice.
You don't need to. So maybe that's what it is, but that's who they became, was known as Jedi Knights.
Awesome. That's cool. That's I can see that too. It they make you you don't understand how it works, but
that's
it works.
Correct. No, but here, I know you don't want to do it this way, but let me explain to you why you want to do it that way.
Excellent. I got a great picture in mind. That's cool. Well, let's shift gears now. And thanks for sharing. And once again, thank you very much for serving our country.
Truly my honor.
Let's talk teaching. You became a teacher through the Georgia TAP program, and now you're a TAP mentor. Could you talk a little bit about pursuing this pathway and some of your experiences from changing from military to working with kids in schools? And for our listeners, the Georgia TAP program is an alternative way of becoming a certified teacher in the state of Georgia.
Absolutely. I was in the second year of teaching. I was offered the opportunity to go to the Coastal Plain RESA which served our area. I taught at Tift County High School at the time, and it wasn't known as TAP at that time. It was a practicum program. Now I predate myself a few years, and the fact of the matter is that our schools of education, our colleges of education simply aren't putting out enough teachers right now. They haven't been for a while. Enrollment has dropped something like 35% over the last 5 years. That really puts a strain on the teacher pipeline. So we have to look for ways to bring people in from alternative professions who did not have the classical school of education training in college. And the TAP program is a way to do that. It is a bootstrap, a way to give those who have not had that classical school of education training what they need to allow them to move forward and kind of get the feel for what you're supposed to do in the classroom, how things are supposed to run, if you will. So for me, a little differently, obviously, coming from the military into the classroom, as most folks will guess, discipline really isn't much of a problem. I've sort of had some background with that. And the kids that I teach in high school especially are the same kids that I had in the Army. They're just a couple of years younger. So I think I know what makes them tick, and I understand how to push their buttons, and sometimes they understand how to push mine too as well. But they're the same one. So it's training. Teaching is training. Training is teaching. And one of the things that I think it's about adapting to the situation. So the TAP program is certainly a valuable opportunity for folks coming into teaching, and the availability of the TAP program is a valuable opportunity for the school systems to make use of professionals and their real world experience. And that's not a lick on the traditional pathway for teaching. It's just great in the stew of education to have people from different backgrounds who bring something different to the table to start with.
Excellent. So what do you like working with kids?
Well, really more than anything, probably their energy is what I would say. I like teaching high school. One of the cool things about being a teacher is you get to pick your level. So there are lots of teachers who love the energy of kindergarten and first and second grade, and the world is a complete oyster, and they get to get them early. I want have nothing to do with that. But what I do as a high school teacher, there are a lot of teachers who don't want anything to do with that either. So you get to get the kids kind of where they are. And what I really like is, because I get to teach almost adults, is the opportunity to every now and then make their head explode. And if I can do that, if I can challenge their worldview, if I can open their eyes to the possibilities, that's what really makes my day.
That's awesome. It's funny what you're saying, because I'm there with you. I'm a former high school history teacher, and I love teaching 10th graders were my favorite, and that would be world history. And then my next best favorite were 11th graders, which was U.S. history, and the courses. It wasn't really the courses, because my favorite would be U.S., but the 10th grade kids, what I loved about them, and a lot of teachers would tell you, 10th graders, you like 10th graders? And I go, yeah, man, they know that they don't know everything, and they'll let you still have fun with them. So that's kind of,
it does, it works.
It is funny, though, how adults who teach different levels will look at you and go, really?
Absolutely.
So cool. So tell me, what's one thing that you would hope to accomplish when you work with your students? Do you have that one thing that you really hope that you can connect with them on?
Well, one of the things that I think, as I've come to be somewhat introspective about what makes me tick and what do I do, and what is it about the classroom that makes me go, I think that at the core is this desire to try to instill in these kids the desire to learn. Teachers have to be the most motivated learner in the classroom. And sometimes that's not very hard. But if I can instill in the kids a desire to learn and sort of jar their curiosity so that they start to see the possibilities, because things are opening up to them that they did not think possible, kind of give them a peek behind the curtain, if you will. When I graduated from high school, I say that I thought I had the tiger by the tail when I graduated from high school. But when I graduated from college, I was just glad I knew what a tiger was. And so, you know, looking back, that's kind of what I want them to do, is I want to sort of challenge them a little bit so that it isn't so much they, I got this licked. Oh, yeah, you think so? Well, let me take it to the next level and let's see if you really have it licked.
That's excellent. That's very cool. And I like that analogy, by the way. You know, it's when you look at what you think you know and what you don't know, and sometimes, you know, you need that push to really want to know more. And
orange, black, that's a tiger. I get that.
You good? Cool stuff. And I got to go back to this because you've taught U.S. and world history, geography, government, and economics. If you could choose one overall, which one would that be? And just remember, I'm a former history teacher, and I'm thrilled to be talking to another history teacher. And I know, geeky, dorky, whatever you want to call. That's who I am.
Well, so when you give me a menu like that, what I'll do the test-taking skill here, and I'll eliminate the possibilities that are not there.
Okay.
Geography is out the door. If I could build the perfect curriculum in geography, and the class was entitled "Where Are We Going Today," then maybe I could really enjoy doing that. But that would take a while and a lot of collaboration among some folks to be able to do that. Government also, I wipe that off. Even though I am a political wonk, I've run for office more times than I care to admit, and lost all three times. And so I love politics. There's a lot of inside baseball in politics. And what we're missing in teaching government, I think, is that we don't have the simulations that would allow the kids to do that and kind of get a real feel for how it works. So I'll take government off the table as well. But now you leave me with a tough three questions.
Awesome.
With whether it's U.S. or world or econ. I love teaching world history because I've been to so many places. I've walked the ground at Jena, where Napoleon was. I've been in a war or two, so I understand sort of the geopolitical end of things. And that opportunity to try to describe to a kid what it's like when you walk into the cathedral at Reims and the very building just soars up to the sky, that is an awesome opportunity to impart to them some of what I've experienced and what I hope then that I can get them to want to experience as well. So I really, really do love the intellectual challenge of teaching world history. And U.S. history, that there's just something really neat about U.S. history. But I don't know. Maybe it is economics. I'm having a great time right now teaching economics.
I'm disappointed, but I understand. All is good.
I don't know. Maybe you know, you hear my voice. Maybe world history is sort of my.
Yeah, I see some. I hear some passion there. Definitely. That's. But econ. Okay. Well, I'll let you go on that one.
Econ is the opportunity to impact their lives materially. I had a kid this year after school was over with, who sent me an email a couple of weeks after school was over, and he said, "Mr. Tibbetts, my work is offering a 401k. Do I put my money in there, or do I put it in a Roth IRA?"
Nice question.
Now, what a great question. Of course, I gave him the economics answer, which was both. But you know about the one-handed economics economist, right? I think it's Truman who said he wanted to have a one-handed economist. Because economists are always saying, well, on the one hand, but on the other hand.
Nice, so. Nice. Very good. Yes, I can understand what his point was there. Yes. Okay, wait a second. No. You're changing the rules on me. That's not what I asked you, right? Very cool. Let's get into you teaching, all right? So do you have a favorite hook that you like for getting kids interested? Do you have just something that you like to try and do, to that hook, that type thing?
That is a really hard question. Again, it gets back to economics on the one hand, but I, even when I was teaching world history especially, if I can bring the current world into my lesson. That is a hook that kids just aren't used to seeing. So there are days when literally I'll be driving to school and I will hear something on money, on an interview or something, and I go, oh, great. I can pop that with the kids, and we'll that's how I'm going to start. That's right into my lesson today. Or if I was teaching world history and something was going on geopolitically, I could bring that up and then work that back around as a connection to what we were studying in the classroom. And of course, U.S. history, that's easy to draw that connection. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe my favorite hook is to try to connect whatever I'm teaching in the classroom with what is currently going on in the world, because I think that gets it out of a totally academic zone and into a more useful, realistic mode for the kids. And maybe they start to see an opportunity that, hey, this really does connect to what's going on right now.
That's cool. That's it's so neat when kids do see that there is a point to what we're learning, and there is this stuff is real. we didn't just make this
like
up so we can
punish
you
them,
and make you have to. Well, okay, yeah, that's well. Well, we do have to say yes to that. For all you listening right now,
right, exactly.
We have you on.
You
remember,
don't
mind
want
control
to play
here,
with
right?
your Pokemon. You want...
exactly. Nice. So let's go with that. In talking about engagement for a minute, you know, one of the things that I work with teachers sometimes who struggle, and I try and help them work with working on how they engage kids in class. What advice would you give to a teacher who's struggling in helping them create better engaging lessons?
You know, I guess one of the things that you have to ask yourself is why is this not working? I mean, you really do have to ask yourself that. One of the things that I think makes a really good teacher is, again, if you go back to what I said earlier about being the most motivated learner in the classroom, is this natural curiosity on your own to desire to know and to be your own worst critic. Okay, that didn't work. Well, not just it didn't work, I'm going to go do something else, but why didn't it work? And what is it that I need to change? Was the whole thing a total flop? Do I need to abandon it and go a different direction? Or was it just maybe I didn't hook them? Or maybe there were questions that came up that I did not anticipate. And I think that gets to planning it out and going through the details in your mind of what's going to happen. I like to say think through the pauses. Because you're going to run into places in the classroom where there's a pause. And so how do you keep that going? How do you keep the energy going so you don't lose them and the kids turn their head and they've got the chance to do it? I had a kid a couple of years ago that he said we would be in the middle of class and they would think that it was coming to a natural conclusion. And I would turn around and I had something else. And he looked at me and said, dang, Mr. Tibbetts, you always got something else going on here. And that's just it. You need to be prepared in the classroom for when the lesson goes long, and you also got to be prepared for when the lesson goes short, because just to say it's done, we're done. I can do that the last 2 or 3 minutes of class. I can't do that the last 10 minutes of class. So again, I would go back to, you know, did I plan it deeply enough? Did I anticipate the questions? Did I anticipate the problems? Did I anticipate that would take longer or less time than I thought it would? And then can I find an activity or a simulation that will help me pull this together?
That's awesome. The one of the things that is so true about things that will happen in classes, depending on how many classes you teach, you know, especially when you're talking to high school, you could end up with the same lesson and it takes you totally different amounts of time depending on the kids class and how it's made up.
The curse of having one prep is that I teach the same thing 6 times during the day. And you really have to stay on task because it's like, oh, did I tell them that yet? Did I do that? The curse of having more than one prep is that you don't necessarily get to the rhythm. You know, as a teacher, I told somebody one time, you know, if somebody had walked into my first period class today and they had seen what was going on, they would have thought I was the finest teacher in the entire high school, maybe the entire state. No, I'm just kidding there, but that's I shouldn't say that. No, but then
all is good. All is good.
That same person came into my classroom at the last period on a block system, fourth period, and they saw my class, and they go, "You are the absolute worst teacher. I don't know why we even hired you." That, you know, teaching is, especially because classes have their own personality. And depending on the dynamics of the group, I hope none of my former students are listening, but last year's third period, I just had to get through the day on third period every day because it was a challenge to do that. And a lot of people think that, hey, you can just put it in the bottle and go in and spray it on all the kids, you know, and it works every time. And it doesn't, because I've given classes where, because of the dynamics of the class, maybe because of the time of the day, I don't know, the lesson that I gave was just hitting on every cylinder, and two periods later it was falling absolutely flat. So you have to be able to adapt, you really do, and you have to be able to read the crowd, and you have to be able to tell, is this working, or if it's not working, you got to get off of it and go on.
That's awesome advice. You know, it's. I had someone one time talk about how, as they're not a teacher, but they're a public speaker. They do lots of public speaking, and they took some lessons in improv and stand-up comedy just to kind of help them think on their feet based upon what you just described, which is a lot of it is the same when you talk about it, because your audience are different, and you got to be able to read them. And if you don't respond, then that's when, you know, you end up with the kids disappearing into Never Never Land, or absolutely, the trouble happening, or whatever. And it's funny because you're so right. Those different classes, you know, sometimes, you know, you end up with something that you got that's really great, and in the next period, because of the difference, they don't get as excited about it, or they just let you talk, or they just let you do, or the activity just goes like that because they don't have any questions about it. And you're like, okay, that was supposed to last a little bit longer than that. What happened here? And, you know, and it's funny, you know, you have those memories of those kids that you just remember that whichever direction it goes in that type of situation, yes. But paying attention, what awesome advice. I love that. You got to pay attention to that crowd, because they're going to tell you whether you're crashing, burning, or you're hitting
absolutely
it on all cylinders. You know, one of the things that I want to make sure that I talk about is, or get you to talk a little bit about, is I work with teachers who struggle with classroom management.
I struggle with classroom management. Come to my classroom.
So can you talk a little bit about what helps you deal with that, or what helps you approach the way you work with kids to help you get through that? Do you have any advice for a teacher on becoming better at managing the behaviors of
kids? One of the things I would say is talk to your peers. There are people who are really good at it, and there are others who struggle, and there are others who are really bad at it. One of the things that I got out of the TAP program, probably what I think is the most valuable piece of what I got out of the TAP program, was that we had to go and observe other teachers. That was really, really valuable. And even as an experienced teacher, really and truly, sometimes you need to get out of your comfort zone and go watch what another teacher is doing. What they're doing may be working, and you figure out why, and what they're doing may not be working, and you figure out why. And then a little bit of introspection to take that back into your own classroom. So that's the one thing I would say, is get out of your classroom and go watch somebody else and go talk to somebody else. And then the other thing, obviously, is just to have somebody come watch you and sit down, not as an evaluator, but just somebody comes in and watches, and then you sit down and you have an honest heart-to-heart talk about what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. Check your ego at the door and you know, get the armor off and thicken your skin up a little bit and see what you can do to try to do it. But the other piece of it is especially for a young teacher, is no fear. No fear. You are, at the same time, you got to be human. You got erasers on your pencils, and you ought to let the kids know you got an eraser on your pencil, and that you're going to make a mistake, and it's okay. And consequently, it's okay for them to make some mistakes as well. And I think that has a lot to do with it. So get your head up out of your classroom. I get locked into 116, to room 116 sometimes, and I really need to work on it. It's interesting that you ask this question, because the guy who teaches next door to me teaches AP and honors classes almost exclusively. So, of course, they are much more staid and cerebral in all they do. And my classroom is managed chaos. I mean, I may be auctioning chocolate off on a given day, and things can get pretty hairy. But he and I have talked about it. And going into this year, one of the things that I was going to absolutely work on this year as starting my ninth year of teaching was going to be working on classroom management. It's something that every teacher struggles with. And so maybe that's the other thing, is you ain't alone if you're having problems. So go find some help. Go ask somebody.
I like that advice. That's awesome, because it's just like that. Because just because you have success in this class or this semester or this year doesn't mean that next year the mix might be a little more difficult. And you need to constantly be learning how to work with and manage their behaviors.
Sometimes you're just dealt a bad hand.
Yes, very much so.
Veteran teachers, I had my third period class last year. I had two kids in the class who happened to be brothers. They were twins. And one of my colleagues said, I would have never let those two kids be in the same classroom with you at the same time. She had taught them both, and she understood. And I didn't know enough to say no, or we just the way it fell out. And so they were a challenge. And sometimes it's just that way. As a platoon sergeant told me one time, sometimes it just bees that way.
Nice. You know, it's funny, because what you got me thinking of is I love movies and different goofy comedies and stuff like this. And I did my basic training was at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and I did it at the time when they had just finished filming Stripes there.
Army training, sure.
Exactly. Very much so, Army training. And one of the scenes that I love in that movie is the captain, who's John Larroquette, the actor, who says, those are fine-looking men, Sergeant. Are those mine? No, sir. You know, you see these soldiers coming down on the confidence course.
Absolutely.
And they're doing everything perfectly. And I'll say, no, sir,
those
would be yours. And it's the ones with John Candy and all these guys coming down. They're running into the wall. And, yeah, that's kind
you
of the
just
hand
get
that you
dealt that sometimes. Hand sometimes. That's exactly right.
Nice. So, you know, you're getting, as Teacher of the Year for the state of Georgia, you're getting ready to, or probably already started, touring the state and going other places. I imagine you might end up in some old stomping grounds, maybe even Washington, some places like that. Tell me what type of message you want to deliver.
As Teacher of the Year, when you file your application after you're chosen as a District Teacher of the Year, then the District Teachers of the Year have to fill out the state's here's seven essays to write packet. And one of the questions they ask is, what's your platform? So you have to give it some thought about what's going to be your message for the year. And the message that I landed on is grab a partner. And so I have some notion of what, when I talk to audiences, I tell them what I think partners are, accountability buddies, partners are folks who'll go the extra mile with you. They'll check their ego. They'll do whatever it takes to get through it. So that's my core message, and it works on a lot of levels. I just finished today speaking to a Rotary Club, and I talked to them about how do they partner with their schools. And tomorrow I'm going to get a chance to talk to administrators and data collectors for the state. And I'm going to talk to them about how do they partner with their teachers. So that's really my core message, is grab a partner when you, and it goes back to something that I learned very early on in my military career. Anytime you're faced with a difficult or a new task, what we did in the military was we looked around and found some other unit who had just done virtually the same or just about the same mission. And we went and talked to them. We got their lessons learned, if they had any procedures that they would provide. And they provided it. They gave it to you. Because we all understood that it was sort of a one-team, one-fight situation. And really, that's exactly what I want teachers to do, and I want other folks to do, is recognize that we're all in this together. And the work and the effect of the group has a magnifying effect on the individual. So go grab a partner. And for teachers especially, get out of your comfort zone and go find that partner somewhere else in the building that you're not used to interacting with. You may be amazed to find out what you can learn. So that's message number one. And then the other message, which I think is my responsibility, I think I get to write my own job description, if you will. And one of the things that I think I have a responsibility to do is advocate on behalf of the 115,000 teachers that I get to represent this year. And so that other message is that teachers are professionals, and you need to trust the professionals, and you need to ask the professionals what their opinion is and what they think should happen. And so that's sort of my other piece of that message. But grab a partner. That's what I tell everybody.
Love it. Awesome messages. And I wish you the best with making that and delivering that message, and all the people, that's great stuff. And I could see them being able to have the opportunity to learn a lot from listening to you and being able to carry that forward. So good stuff. One of the things that I'd like to do is, at this time, is there a way that if a teacher or administrator, somebody would like to reach back out to you and connect with you, how can they do that?
I'm fully connected. I'm not actually. The easiest thing is my email account. 2018 Georgia GA Teacher of the Year TOTY. So 2018GATOTY at gmail.com. That's my email address. That's the quickest way, probably. If you go to the State Department of Education, there's a link on there that they can get to me. I got five email addresses now, but the 2018 GA TOTY is the one I like to use.
Awesome.
And then I am on Facebook. GA Teacher is the Facebook account for the Georgia Teacher of the Year. I get to be the custodian for the next year. And then you can reach me on Twitter also. I'm at 2018 GA TOTY, TOTY. So there are a couple of ways. I don't do Pinterest yet. I haven't figured that out. I'm not sure what my interest in Pinterest is, but probably my Gmail account is the
awesome. And I will put links to all of that in the show notes. So you don't have to be, if you're driving right now listening to us, you don't need to, cause an accident or something. All you got to do is just go back to the show notes, and you'll have those links there where they'll take you straight to them on any of those accounts. So,
super.
All right. So great. So I've got two questions now that I'd like to ask my guests. And the first one goes like this. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers, they haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Well, actually, I've been working on this because that's one of the groups that I get to talk to is new teachers or prospective teachers. And so I'll go back to my initial point that I've made twice now, which is you must be the most motivated learner in your classroom. So that would be number one. And beyond that, I think it goes into asking and seeking out help. You are not going to have all the answers the first time you go through it. So go find some help and go ask, and don't be afraid to make a mistake. Try something new. One of the things I pride myself on is when somebody comes to me and says, hey, we'd like you to try this or we want to do that, I give it a try, usually. And if it doesn't work, I tell them, that didn't work. And if it does work, I tell them, that worked, and then I'll do it. So classroom management, that absolutely has to be, and we've talked about that. Be confident. Kids smell fear. They do. So you got to be very confident about what you're doing. And remember, you're going to get better. That was my first mentor the first year, a guy named Ian Crowley, who now teaches up in Rome. And I would go to him, and I said, Ian, this just didn't go right today. And he goes, it's okay. You'll get better. Maybe I did. I don't know. And here's a good one. Obviously, I've thought about
yes.
this. So you're getting the full Monty here.
All is good. All is good.
Students cheat. Remember that. They are going to cheat. So make it a game. Figure out how you can get ahead of them. But do not accept it and stamp it out at every opportunity. But remember, they are going to try to do that. Here's an interesting one, which I get a lot of pushback on. First graders are not babies. And I hear that from teachers a lot. Oh, those are my babies. And I go, no, they are not. They are your students. And I think that's there's a nuance there. And on the other end of the scale, I hear high school principals and teachers talk about them being children, and they are absolutely not. So I like the word students, and I think that I think words matter, and I think if you keep that in mind, when I was a cadet at West Point, we had a platoon sergeant that called us clowns, and it drove me absolutely batty because I was not a clown. Somehow, some way, I had gotten into the United States Military Academy, and I was not a clown, and I didn't want to be called a clown. So the label matters, I think. You do have clowns in class, which you can do that sometimes. Be the adult in the room. That goes to that other piece. If you don't want them to call you Mr. Tibbetts, and you somehow want them to call you by your first name, at least be Mr. John or Miss Sherry. But be the adult in the room and dress for success. That I think that's important. Be student-centered in everything that you do. That's a really hard lesson that I've had to learn. I am pretty good sage from the stage. I can stand up and lecture with the best of them and enjoy it. And I've been told by some folks that I do it pretty well. But I also like to get the student activities in. So there's a good mixture in there. And then the last thing, the last piece of advice is advocate for yourself and advocate for your profession, because there are lots of decisions that get made that you have absolutely no way to impact unless you are part of a professional organization that's going to impact for you. So there's my laundry.
That's awesome. I'm kind of stuck on this word, awesome, if you haven't noticed. It's kind of...
That's great. I'm a great
cool. And excellent advice. I love that, and I really like that part about it. And I could see the pushback happening with the babies versus the children. So being students, and that's good commentary right there. But I love that advice, and being the adult in the room. Yeah. Okay. That's. You know, there's some who I think they've forgotten that part. That okay. Which one of you is the adult?
No, it's okay to have, and maybe because I teach seniors, it's okay to have fun, and it's okay to joke around, and I use sarcasm way more in my classroom than I should ever do. I know I'm not supposed to do that. But you got to remember, at the end of the day, my military shows through, there is a senior subordinate relationship that has to come through here, and I think you solve a lot of problems from classroom management standpoint if you remember that you're the adult in the room.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that advice. So here is the last question. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
No, there are five.
Awesome. Okay. Whoa. This will be a first. All right. I usually have the question. Can I name two?
Yeah, no, there are five. This was something that came out in my application process as I was thinking about, who I am and why I got to be where I am. So number one is easy. That's Bill Belcher. He was my high school band director, and there's nobody like Bill. I get verklempt just talking about him. He taught me excellence, and he taught me that ought to be what we're striving for. So Bill Belcher's number one. Norma Carrington Boyd, now Boyd, she was my ninth grade algebra teacher. Tough as nails, great teacher. A lady named Luana Modling, who was who I ran into twice. First is in the program was called Independent Learners way back in the 70s, gifted program. And then I ran into her again at GHP. Just an amazing lady. Danny Sparks was my U.S. history teacher, and I've tried to remember why, but I love history, so it had to have something with Miss Sparks. That had to be part of that. And then there's a guy named Roy McWilliams, who was a football coach extraordinaire. Coached at Central Macon High School, and then we got him down in Tifton. We brought the whole coaching staff down there, And I was in his class the first year he was in Tift County. And Roy taught us 10th grade English. He could quote Shakespeare like he knew him personally. And I was just awed by that. So what's interesting about the question, though, overall, so there's my five, is I actually got the chance to say to one of them exactly what it was. And this is what I told her. It was her. I told her, I said, I try to model you in my classroom. I said, high standards, a good dose of empathy and toughness and laughter, because she did that. And again, it's not, at times I'm a little bit too sarcastic. And I had the opportunity to tell her, thank you for being a role model for me. And that I only wish, my only regret was that I was not a better math student for her than I should have been. But I did have that opportunity. And I think when I told her that, we were messaging each other back on Facebook, and she was very kind, and she said, thank you. And I said to her, lest you think that I'm just blowing smoke up your skirt here, lady. I took a clip of my application from my Teacher of the Year application packet that had the paragraph that had her name in it. So I actually have had the chance to say thank you to one of those awesome teachers.
That's incredible, and that's very cool, because that's something that I never had the chance for the teachers from my high school or younger days that made the difference. But I did when I decided to reach out, since I couldn't find the others, and I hate to say many of them had passed on, but I was able to do it with a college professor who made a difference, and that was cool, and especially because she wrote me back, which was neat. So that's kudos on being able to have that opportunity to say that. And I like your five. That's awesome. So excellent. It's neat to be able to recognize those people who made a difference, and especially what great to be able to say that you modeled yourself after how she taught.
Well, that is, I think, that's probably a piece of my military training. I got that piece of advice very early on in the academy from a major who was a tactical officer. And he told us, he said, you're going to run into people every day. He said, learn something from every one of them. Sometimes it'll be the things not to do, and sometimes it will be the things to do. But figure out what it is about what they're doing that you either like or dislike, and then either stay away from it or try to model it. And that has been extraordinary advice that has served me extremely well over the years.
Excellent. I love that. John, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. Congratulations again on being the Georgia Teacher of the Year for 2018. So cool. That is just awesome. I know you got a lot of things coming and going, and I appreciate you taking the time to sit here and talk with me. I wish you the best, safe travels, and I look forward to hearing about all your escapades, and I look forward to hearing your presentation, because I'm sure I'm going to hear you at some point during this year, because I'm going to make sure I do.
Then you get to grade me when that happens. You come up and tell me good, bad, up, down, we need to know those kinds of things.
Well, I'll be happy to share my thoughts, but no grading, because I got to tell you something. What's been awesome here is that I've had to restrain myself from wanting to talk more so that I let you talk and tell your stuff. And, yeah, those of you listening, you know I can talk too much, right? Okay, so no comments from the peanut gallery.
Well, thanks so much. This has been a real pleasure.
Enjoyed it. Thank you. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and hosts. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends. Take care.